They limped painfully down the bank, and once the foremost of the two men staggered among the rough-strewn rocks, they were tired and weak, and their faces had the drawn expression of patience which comes of hardship long endured. They were heavily burdened with blanket packs, which were strapped to their shoulders. Head straps, passing across the forehead, helped support these packs. Each man carried a rifle. They walked in a stooped posture, the shoulders well forward, the head still farther forward, the eyes bent upon the ground.
"I wish we had just about two of them cartridges that's laying in that cache of ourn," said the second man.
His voice was utterly and drearily expressionless. He spoke without enthusiasm, and the first man, limping into the milky stream that foamed over the rocks, vouchsafed no reply. The other man followed at his heels. They did not remove their footgear, though the water was icy cold, so cold that their ankles ached and their feet went numb. In places, the water dashed against their knees, and both men staggered for footing. The man who followed slipped on a smooth boulder, nearly fell, but recovered himself with a violent effort, at the same time uttering a sharp exclamation of pain. He seemed faint and dizzy and put out his free hand while he reeled, as though seeking support against the air. When he had steadied himself, he stepped forward, but reeled again and nearly fell. Then he stood still and looked at the other man, who had never turned his head. The man stood still for fully a minute, as though debating with himself. Then he called out,
"I say, Bill, I've sprained my ankle."
Bill staggered on through the milky water. He did not look around. The man watched him go, and though his face was expressionless as ever, his eyes were like the eyes of a wounded deer. The other man limped up the farther bank and continued straight on without looking back. The man in the stream watched him. His lips trembled a little, so that the rough thatch of brown hair which covered them was visibly agitated. His tongue even strayed out to moisten them.
"Bill!" he cried out.
It was the pleading cry of a strong man in distress, but Bill's head did not turn. The man watched him go, limping grotesquely and lurching forward with stammering gait up the slow slope toward the soft skyline of the low-lying hill. He watched him go till he passed over the crest and disappeared.
Then, as the first 10 cups of punch went round, Bettles the Unquenchable sprang to his feet and struck up his favorite drinking song. "There's Henry War Beecher and Sunday school teachers all drunk of the sassafras root. But you bet all the same, if it had its right name, it's the juice of the forbidden fruit." "Oh, the juice of the forbidden fruit," roared out the bacchanalian chorus. "Oh, the juice of the forbidden fruit. But you bet all the same, if it had its right name, it's the juice of the forbidden fruit." Malmu Kid's frightful concoction did its work. The men of the camps and trails unbent in its genial glow, and jest and song and tales of past adventure went round the board. Aliens from a dozen lands, they toasted each and all. It was the Englishman, Prince, who pledged, "Uncle Sam, the precocious infant of the New World." The Yankee Bettles, who drank to, "The Queen, God bless her." And together, Savoy and Myers, the German trader, clanged their cups to Alsace and Lorraine. Then Malmu Kid arose, cup in hand, and glanced at the grease paper window, where the frost stood full 3 inches thick. "A health to the man on trail this night. May his grub hold out. May his dogs keep their legs. May his matches never miss fire."